Welcome. This is Christopher Holmes, and this is the Zero Point Radio Show through BBS Radio. It is February 2nd, 2013. And just before we get on to with the show today, I did want to just mention two events that have come up. Or actually, the first event was that Dee and I, we've made all our taping of shows, we've made them accessible to the public. And so we've fronted the money, and that's working fine. So please have a look at our past shows. And I'm going to go through that and put up who the authors or activists were that we had on different shows. So we do hope that people will look at our archive service and listen to the back shows that we've had. Okay, that was a first event. A second event is on February 17th, which is 2 weeks as of tomorrow. There's a Canadian-wide chemtrail watching event, and people are trying to put on chemtrail events in different cities across Canada. And you may have heard we had Afsane on several weeks ago, and she's the Vancouver Sky Watch person. And if you put into your event Canadian Sky Watch, you'll come upon Afsane's work and see a lot of her videos on different aspects of chemtrail spraying. So next week we're going to have Afsane on the show on Saturday afternoon, and it's the day before the Canadian-wide chemtrail activist show, which is on the 17th of February. And we're also going to have on the head of the Toronto Sky Watch program. So it should be an interesting show next week with our focus on chemtrails again. I know we focus on chemtrails quite a bit, but people have to look up in the sky and see these people are trying to poison us. This is obvious intoxicants in chemtrails, and they're being spread across this nation. So people need to wake up to this. The chemtrail activism is most important. Okay, so today I've got Dee here, and I'll bring Dee in. Hi, Dee. How are you?
Much better, thank you, Christopher. I got mowed down, as you know, by that famous flu that's floating around. Let me tell you, as bad as it is, it is not worth risking your life to take a flu shot, let me tell you.
I know, A.D.
I can live through it. Anybody can.
Yeah. I had something or else a couple of weeks ago, and I just lived through it okay. You just don't do anything.
That's what you do. That's what we did as kids.
And, yeah, exactly.
You know, we weren't afraid of little germs here and there.
You know,
this business of, heavens, there's a microbe out there. It might get you, so take all this toxic material and slam it into your bloodstream, and that'll make you better. Yeah, right.
From all the pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah, they're really looking after
our health, aren't they?
Yeah, uh-huh. Well, they're making sure that our health is in exactly the state that they need it to be in, which is not.
Yes, exactly. I keep coming back to this UN Agenda 21 and the depopulation programs of these idiots.
Oh, wait. Just wait till we get in with our guest today. Our guest today is Keto, who is, okay, now Keto, plug your ears, dear, because she gets embarrassed if I wax praising about her. She's very humble, but Keto is an indigenous woman who has seen it all, seen through it all, more importantly, and has written an amazing book called A Calamity Threatens Your Happiness, which is taken from a native tradition where when a tribe wanted to know whether there was danger approaching, they would send somebody to climb the tree with the long needles, with the long leaves, and that would be like a pine tree. And, of course, we've all seen these images of those great big white pines in the north of Canada with an eagle perched at the top, and somebody would climb up there and take a look around, and then if there was something happening that they didn't like, they would come down and say, a calamity threatens your happiness. Now, Quito, who is our guest, runs the Eagle Watch News, and Eagle Watch is a service that she has put together over the years, and I'll tell you, this is how I ran into her. Somebody forwarded it to me, and I went, holy smokes, this woman really knows where it's at. And when I read her book, I almost fell over at the insight, the depth of the insight that she shows. It's really, truly incredible. And this is why it's so important that we have her on the show today, because we're looking at the Idle No More movement and how phenomenal that's been. The growth of it has been phenomenal. And you see all these people, and they're out being active against Bill C-45 and the environmental damage and everything else. And Quito says, hang on, there's more to this than meets the eye. So that's why we've got her here today to, you know, clear the air about what's going on with Idle No More, what's going on with Bill C-45, what's really going on with what's happening in the world. So without further ado, welcome, Quito, and thank you so much for finally joining us.
Thank you, Dee. That's almost a hard act to follow there, but I'll try and do my best.
Not for you, my dear, not for you. Anyways, I'm just going to let you hop in.
You just want me to launch, eh?
You've got an agenda for this show, and I know roughly what it is. So just
yeah, I put together some things in a kind of a sensible way, I hope. And two things that are always part of the overview is connecting the dots, because you got to try and see the bigger picture sometimes when you get things dropped in your lap, see where they fit in. And the other thing is my mission is just to encourage people to use their brains and think about things and try and do your own research and remember that things are often not as they appear. We live in the age of the spectacle. We live in the age of information, and there's a lot of misinformation out there. So I thought the first thing we could just go over is the Idle No More movement. I'm getting pretty tired of it myself, unfortunately, because of how I see what it is. As far as how it came up so quickly and has got such widespread mainstream coverage, and that to me is the first clue that something's not quite right. Because, you know, so often we try and get important issues out there and we meet with so much resistance.
Mm-hmm.
So when something
like
just flies to
modified
the center.
Salmon.
Eh?
That thing is growing like a genetically modified salmon.
Yeah, and that's about what it is, you know. So the way that I see it is that someone is doing damage control, because there is an obvious uprising to these changes in legislation and to just life circumstances for a lot of people is just getting harder and harder to live. And so the elitists, they anticipate people's reactions before people often realize their own reactions. And so this is being controlled, and it's also being polarized. There's Indigenous and Canadian taxpayers are being polarized against each other, and that's part of the overriding strategy, too, of divide and conquer, or some people call it the Hegelian dialectic and various names, but it makes people fight each other instead of looking up at who in society is manipulating and orchestrating situations that are not good for people, you know. I mean, we hear about depopulation plans and stuff like that, but it just goes far beyond what most people are willing or able to grasp in the course of a day. So, as far as Idle No More, there was two more things that I wanted to mention on that, is about to remind people that the band council chiefs who claim to represent status Indians, they are agents of the crown. They take an oath to the crown, and this has always been an issue as far as conflict of interest and who we are and who we want to be.
How can these people say that they represent indigenous to the crown when they swear an oath to the crown? That's a direct conflict of interest. So why aren't people told that? If we knew that, I mean, it would color everything right from the get-go, wouldn't it?
It would
change our perception of how works. Holy smokes, taking an oath to the crown. Well, why don't you just go to court with your lawyer who took an oath to the court? You know.
Exactly. And the other ones are the politicians and the police officers and the military,
exactly,
which you would expect them to. But so, yeah, Sean Atleo, you know, the head of the leading status organization, which claims to represent indigenous people, but, our voices are not being heard. Even people who are status Indians, they don't feel represented by the Assembly of First Nations or Sean Atleo, who's always involved in some debacle or some scandal there in his territory. But isn't he lucky that he got to get time off for his health? Well, he's in such conflict of interest. What we call it, we call that rate cognitive dissonance. It must be blowing his mind.
If he's got one.
Yeah, if he's got any left. It's sad.
Well,
it's a very sad thing.
It is pathetic. But, I mean, you have to realize this guy is not some poor guy living on a reserve. He is mega rich. So is his family.
Yeah.
The Atleo family, Canadians
like to.
They own an air service that is the only contact between the community of Ahauset and the mainland, running supplies and passengers in and out of Ahauset. And they own that, and they also own a logging company, and they have massive contracts for forestry. So these guys have been making money hook, line, and sinker all along the way, and Sean is at the top of that. So how can he represent the people who are sitting in miserable conditions on reserves where they don't have proper water, they don't have proper homes, they don't have proper anything? It boggles my mind to think that there are rich indigenous people who are treating their people the way rich elite treat theirs.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, are we cattle? Are we all cattle?
And maybe Kito might explain Idle No More and how that relates to Bill
C-35.
45, sorry. Okay.
Well, I think she's getting into that.
There was just one more thing I wanted to mention, and then actually that was what we were going to go into next, is about that C-45. It's so big, and yet it's a lot of nonsense, unfortunately. The one thing that's happening with this Idle No More movement, now there is a growing recognition amongst Indigenous and Canadians that there are a lot of common issues here and that we are all being royally screwed. And so there's calls for unity and alliances, but we have to take a lesson from the past and remember that this is Turtle Island and the leadership must come from Indigenous people. We can't have Canadians, settler people taking over all the time, because that's what's happened in the past, and we always end up getting the dirty end of the stick, and that won't work anymore.
No, it can't. It can't. There can't be a dirty end of the stick anymore. That's the whole point. If anything is going to be run properly, there is no dirty end of the stick.
We've had enough of it. We've seen enough of it. And unfortunately, there's a lot of misinformation out there against Indigenous people and what our lives are like. But we're like anybody else, as you point out. There's a whole spectrum. We've got good people and bad people, and we've got traditional and modern people, but really, we're not Canadians. We're not Aboriginal Canadians. That's not what we're striving to be. We're striving to be who we are and who our ancestors taught us to be. And that's really an important backdrop to what's taking place in the world right now.
Yeah, it's
but,
important.
But if you like, for the sake of people who are into it, we can go into the C-45 thing and a couple of things in it and because there's a lot of stuff there that still needs to be clarified.
Oh, there's all kinds of stuff in C-45 that needs clarification. But of course, one of the biggest problems that I saw with C-45 was that it kind of paved the ground for the financial agreements with China, because the environmental protections are just being lifted left, right, center, and sideways, and our resources are up for grabs.
Exactly.
And, of course, where are a lot of these untouched resources located? Well, smack dab in the middle of reserves. How curious.
Yeah, it is. It's a great irony the way it's unfolding, and then especially in the north where the average person is not seeing what's happening.
Nor
but
can
this
they.
C-45, there's four whole pages of different items in it, and it's meant to be intimidating, and it is very overwhelming. I agree with you that's the purpose of it. It's got to do with the international investments and all these resource wars. It all goes together.
And it's very skilled baffle-gab, isn't it?
Yes, it's part of this legal rip-off that's been implemented for about 400 years now. Even Carol Quigley, who was a history professor for Bill Clinton, he wrote a book, Tragedy and Hope, and he describes that, how the warlords of the early colonial era, they're part of their sons always studied in law, because law is what is being used to rob the people. Law is not justice.
No, of course not.
Everything that Hitler did was legal.
Mm-hmm.
They passed laws to make it legal what they were doing. So nowadays you hear things about rule of law and international law. Well, it all comes from the British law. It will never contradict the British law, and that's always going to be in imperial interest. We have to get to justice and make the law be justice, because it's not.
Well, I mean, it's all in the application, isn't it? It's all in
the
application of it, because the law basically, generally from what I've seen in the law, and I've studied a fair bit of law, is the law itself, as it sits, is pretty much pretty fair, and contract law is pretty fair. But when you come to the application of it and the interpretation of it, and how it is applied one way here and a different way over there, well, that's where it all gets skewed. And people have the idea that if they use the law properly and go to court, that they might get some justice out of it. But how can you when the courts are corrupt?
Yeah.
You know, you're dealing with a corrupt animal. You cannot expect justice out of corruption.
This is it, and we have to be able to make that distinction.
Not only make it, but enforce it. You know, and we can, but we have to make our voices heard, because what we've seen, and I know you've seen it, I've seen it, Christopher, I know you've seen it, I think everybody's seen it, that when the people stand up and demand the right stuff, they get it.
Yeah.
But they have to stand up and demand it. So now...
Well, the elitists are afraid of the mob, and they're afraid of people speaking up.
Yep. They're afraid of
the
us.
People
aren't
really
doing
are.
It.
They should be.
Well, it's like George Bush said in 91, George Sr., he said, if the people saw what we had done, they'd be chasing us through the streets to lynch us. No
yeah,
kidding.
Exactly.
I would be at the front of that line, let me tell you. Let me tell you, Mama, get out of my way, because I'm coming.
And the way the court system goes along with all of this is terrible.
Oh, it's horrendous. And then, but you know... Quito, share with us what you were talking about earlier with C-45 and the resources grab that's on the...
Well, as I was saying, they got four pages of various things and relating to different things like the environment, as you mentioned, and different things that affect in the Indian Act and changes to how reserve land is owned, which this has been in the works for a while, and how the votes are taken on the res and in the communities, as far as not a vote of the whole community, but a vote of who shows up at a meeting. And it's like you were saying earlier about the people who control the community, the nepotists, it's a family affair, and so it's very easy for the majority of the people in the community to not be aware. Even going back to the James Bay Hydro Project back in the 70s there, and going up into the 90s when so much was going on, they took a vote up there, and they took that vote when most of the people were out hunting on the land, and so they passed approval of the hydro project coming in. And that's one of our biggest examples. And so now they're making it a legislation that whoever happens to be there that day, that's who gets the vote, and nobody else's voice matters, which, of course, goes completely against Indigenous ways of self-governance. So, there's a number of things, like in the Fisheries Act, no longer recognizes Indigenous right to fish for commercial purposes, and a whole lot of things there, but it goes far beyond that. The Navigable Waters Protection Act has become the Navigation Protection Act, which basically means that the water is no longer protected, but the navigation for big companies to move in and put their projects on rivers and lakes. And when you put that with those environmental changes, it's like there are none. It's open season to foreign investment and a final resource grab that's going on all over the world.
Yeah,
but one of the things, because you're leading into the FIPA, as you so correctly put it, is the Bretton Woods part in this whole list in Bill C-45. I haven't heard anybody pick up on that part of it, and I think it's really quite important to take a look at it.
Oh, yeah. Well, until you mentioned that to me earlier, I had no idea it was Bretton Woods. Of course, only my friend Keto would go and dig that deep. Okay, spill it, honey.
Well, it was just glancing through because of the type of things that I look at regularly and looking at the global governance and New World Order. There's different names of people and organizations that keep coming up. And when you look at them, then you see how they interact with each other. And it's not, I mean, you can call it a conspiracy theory if you like, but it's out in the open. And even, I think it was Henry Kissinger said it, or several people have said it, it's hiding right out in the open.
Of course. That's what they always do. They hide it out in the open where nobody's going to see it.
Nobody's looking. It's right in front of your face. You just got to look at it.
Yeah, because if people say something, you think to yourself, oh, they must have it hidden. So you never look in the open. You look under every rock and tree, but you can't find it. Son of a gun, it's right in front of your face.
Yep, they're right out there. They're doing their thing. And the Bretton Woods thing rang a bell from previous research into things like the Council on Foreign Relations and the Round Table Groups. And the Bretton Woods, they try to play it down, but really what it has to do with is international finance, capital controls, what currency is the base currency, and all this kind of stuff. It's quite involved. And just to give an example, for us ordinary people to understand it, there's a list at the Bretton Woods website that of the members. And so there was just a few names that I highlighted to give you an example. In the category of the warmongers, we have Madeleine Albright, Henry Kissinger, James Baker III, Brent Scowcroft, Frank Carlucci, George Shultz, George Soros, Zbigniew Brzezinski, Ross Perot, and James Wolfensohn.
There you go.
Now, those names should ring bells for people.
Oh, they ring lots of bells. In fact, that's Westminster Cathedral going off at noon. Hello.
Yeah, they're the people who should be chased down the street.
Yeah,
for sure. And so they hide behind these various think tanks. And think tanks, the right-wing think tanks, get a lot of money from corporations to promote certain viewpoints, and it bedazzles people. It's in the universities. So you've got these top-ranking think tanks with their representatives at the Bretton Woods, and there's Brookings Institute, there's Council on Foreign Relations, Leslie Gelb himself, You've got the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. Now, that's doublespeak if I ever heard of it.
Yeah, sort of like Obama getting the Peace Prize.
What's that?
It's sort of like Obama getting the Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah, exactly. It's doublespeak. It's the opposite of what they're saying.
Yeah.
So they've got
black man
center for
tongue. Did you hear
and
that?
And then
one?
They've got all these international banks.
Oh yes, well
from
we
every
can't
country
leave them
you
out.
Can think of.
Yeah, we can't leave them out. We know they're involved.
We've got this. They've got this BNP Paribas with Paul Volcker. Well, he was part of the Federal Reserve. He works closely with the Desmarais family, which is one of Canada's richest families. And they were involved in a scandal over the oil for Euros, which led to the U.S. invasion of Iraq. When they went, you know, that's what that was about. They were dealing in Euros with the Iraqis, and the U.S. didn't like that. They want to keep the U.S. dollar dominant.
Well,
so that's what
this
Bretton Woods stuff is about.
Yep, that's what the whole thing was about. Now, here we are in a situation, I was just reading earlier today, that China is attempting to dump its U.S. dollar reserves and go back into the yen. And let me see, where was it here? They were basically talking about how, their U.S. assets are not such assets anymore. And then I look at our situation. I mean, Beijing is pivoting away from the U.S. dollar to the yuan or yen or whatever, and trying
yuan.
To sway swaths of the global economy to follow that path. So Beijing really wants to get rid of the U.S. dollar peg. In order to do that, it needs huge gold reserves, and that brings us to what's going on in Mali.
Indeed it does. And the Chinese have been trying to do this for some time, but they've been under certain threats. If they want to be part of the club, they could not upset the apple cart like that.
Yeah, well, and now we've got a
but
FIFA
it's inevitable.
Going with China. Now Harper what? Wants to sign a FIFA with China. Isn't that assisting China in their goal? I think it is. You know, because they can, the more that they have their gold reserves, well, they can dig it up in Canada, and they already well know it.
Right, right. Well, they did sign an agreement, but I believe it's yet to be legislated by Parliament.
That'll be interesting because there's certainly enough complaints going on. But you know, I've said this before, and I'm very concerned about it. The fact that I was saying that. I thought that the FIFA was being used as a red herring. It's genuine. It's not happening. But I think that the patience of the Chinese, you know, we talk about the inscrutable Chinese, but the Chinese are very patient when it comes to resources because they know the gold's not going to come out of the ground by itself. They know the water is not coming out of the ground by itself. So it's going to be there whenever they get their FIFA ratified, whenever that all gets going. And in the meantime, all these people are having a great big huff and puff about it. And behind our backs, they're signing the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which puts us into yet another hole. And then
they've been working on these FIFAs for some time.
Oh, yeah, this is
with
it.
Various nations.
They got us doing this dance, and of course, the more they dance, the less we understand, and the less we understand, the more they like it.
Of course.
So, I mean, this is where that's heading, but really, they're going into Mali to essentially take the gold. They're loaded with resources in Mali in Africa, and that's exactly where it's going.
To belabor the Bretton Woods thing, but just to clarify what it's about leading into that other stuff, is that Bretton Woods, it's behind the organizations like the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank Group.
Mm-hmm.
And so the changes that are being made have everything to do with getting that foreign investment into all these places like Mali, which is one of the poorest countries in the world, and they make it sound like they're helping these people through the IMF, but it's crushing them. And once again, exactly the same as with the Band Council chiefs, the regimes that are in place in African nations are nepotistic, and they do not represent the people right down to the grassroots at all.
Yeah, and of course the people are always disabled enough through their poverty, through their lack of education, through their lack of information, and through their own natural apathy, which comes when you're depressed like that and suppressed.
You know.
And what you wind up with is a situation of tyranny.
It is.
Period.
And they use all these different little legal instruments to terrorize the people. It's not just by the gun. It's by psychological warfare, where the legal things are a big part of it. Like, they've got this multilateral investment guarantee agency, which I would imagine would go with the FIFA stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been around since, I think, the 70s or even the 60s, 1960s. And they describe it as an agency within the World Bank Group which promotes foreign direct investment in developing countries by providing non-commercial risk insurance to private sector cross-border investors.
Hmm.
What do you get out of that?
Oh, talk about major lubrication on a whole bunch of skids.
You know? And so also involved is the World Trade Organization, which
of
is
course
described as an independent organization.
What's independent about that?
You know, well, this is the way they put their words on things.
Mm-hmm.
It's independently owned by the elites, I think, Lee. That's how it's independently operated. All the corporate elites and the banking elites behind all these things.
Well, it says here, I'm not sure when, in 2006, I'm quoting from something, since its creation, which was 1988, MIGA, this multilateral investment guarantee agency, it has issued nearly $14.7 billion in guarantees for projects in 91 countries. And
wow,
they get a lot of this funding from the World Bank Group.
Mm-hmm.
And the promises that different countries have made.
Uh-huh.
But it's quite a shell game, and it's a lot of work to try to figure these darn things out.
Oh, it sure is.
But we have to.
It sure is.
We have to be able to pick and choose our battles and know what things to go at, because, you know, the words sound so far from the reality, but every day somebody else is becoming homeless. There's more and more children that are going to bed without supper or heading out to school in the morning without breakfast. And there's reasons for this. There's huge waiting lists for health care. And it all plays into the same picture if we could just get the overview.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you cannot. I don't care who you are, and I don't care where you are. If your children are starving, you're not going to be listening to what's going on in government. You're not going to be paying attention to the news. Your focus is going to be getting a sandwich in your kid's hand.
Yeah, exactly.
So we are sort of being handled like children having tantrums. Distract, divert, and disengage. It's those three things that they use as a strategy. Make a noise, okay, well, divert their attention. Get them thinking
instead
about something
else. Instead of giving them food, give them some Ritalin.
Yeah, give them this, give them that. And, of course, now you've got a situation where they've taken all of this nonsense with the school shooting in Sandy Hook, like one incident that colors the entire behavior of a nation, and you've got people terrified of other people having guns. And, of course, as my friend David Dees pointed out in some artwork that he did the other day, that the governments have killed 260 million of their own people, but first they had to disarm them. So what do we have?
Well, that's another thing with Hitler.
Exactly.
Hitler was all in favor of gun control.
Of course.
So terrorize enough people and you'll get the gun control. Stalin was also into gun control.
It's odd here a bit. Like, I have a different view of Hitler and his gun control, because I understood Hitler didn't ban guns, and he wanted families to own them. But I think a lot of what we've been presented about Hitler has been because of our Zionist-owned media, and really there's a lot of deception about what really happened in the Second World War. Like, I know people ordinarily use Hitler as just the bad guy, but I think it's a lot more complex, and how he tried to disband the Zionist bankers out of Germany. I think there's a lot more to it than we really know. But let's not get apart from what we're saying here, though.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we know that they will manipulate history to the advantage that they seek. And
yes.
They've always done that. It's one of the main tenets of even Sun Tzu, Art of War. If you want to control a population, you have to control their information.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we are seeing now. And, of course, when you look at the I Don't Know More movement and how that thing sprang up out of next to nothing, and all of a sudden the whole country's going crazy over it, saying, wait a minute, where did that come from? All of this fake solidarity.
Yeah, and gun control does not mean taking away the guns. Gun control means gun control. It doesn't mean getting rid of the guns.
No.
There's more and more guns out there all the time. That's not the point, even in mentioning Hitler and Stalin.
Yeah.
They wanted to know where the guns were because they didn't want the ordinary people rising up. And Hitler killed a lot more than Jews, and Stalin killed far more people than what Hitler did. Stalin should win the prizes that Hitler gets for notoriety.
Well, shall we go to the Vatican and the Inquisition and 5 million people killed by them? You know, just in one shot. So, unbelievable.
Well,
like, when does it stop? It just doesn't seem to stop.
These people are terrible. I can't believe it.
Sorry, say that again, Kito, please.
No, I was trying to hear what Christopher was saying, actually.
Oh, I was just expressing grief at these people, these elites and what they've done, and I didn't mean to interfere.
That's okay.
It's an emotional topic. A person can't just sit there and not
it
say
is.
Anything.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's going to hit you one way or the other, and that's why, you know, I lay it sharp in my pencils and laid my ammo out here today, too. If one thing doesn't get you, something else will.
Yeah.
And I'm just trying to say they're all connected, and for everybody to do their own research.
Yeah. This is the thing that people don't. You know, this is one of the biggest problems that we've got right now is the fact that people simply don't have either the time or the initiative or the motivation to do their own research because they're too pressured by their own lives.
And they're too deceived by the mainstream media. The mainstream media is completely criminally corrupted. Like, people just have to, when you turn on the Canadian news, you're just getting all this Zionist propaganda. I mean, everything we watch on TV is owned by these people. It's terrible.
It's a very small group of people, and it doesn't matter who they are. We don't really want a small group of people owning all the media because we've all got our own opinions. And what's needed, if you want any real democracy, you have to include everybody's opinions. That's why we like to talk in a circle.
I mean, they don't want democracy. They want us to be controlled by these elites. I mean, that's the whole point. And everything we see on TV, it's a pretend democracy. The whole thing is farcical to maintain that we have a democracy.
Well, here's the thing about democracy. You can't have democracy unless you have 100% revelation of truth to everybody. Everybody has to have the truth as to what's going on before anybody can make a rational decision on what to vote for, what to refuse, what to accept. Everybody has to know what's going on. And unfortunately, when you have a media that is owned and you have people being fed a soup of lies all the time, all of which is orchestrated to a particular goal, and that goal always involves somebody else making money off our backs, then what you've got is you've got a situation where you're being governed by the great unwashed who just listen to the media. And so your democracy becomes a major source of frustration. They want to send this democracy all around the world? Well, gee, no wonder why, eh? No wonder why.
Not here.
I mean, it's almost, it's more oppressive than communism, the way it's set up.
Well, the way that people accept it and interpret it, if you ever read the comments that are posted at the end of articles sometimes, there's one where the person is writing and says that we elected these people to run things for us, and we should not question what they do. And that's just such a shocking attitude. It's so frustrating that people take that attitude. Okay,
right,
now you elected them, let them do what they want. Well they still need to be monitored, and they still need to answer to people.
Imagine if IBM ran that way. Okay, imagine if IBM hired a whole bunch of people and said, okay, you run the shop now. Call us if you need us. Right? Imagine. How fast would IBM have grown into the mega monster that it is today if the people that they hired were just ignored? Well, we hired you, so we'll let you do it. Well, not. And, of course, it's exactly the same. These guys are accountable to us. We pay for them. Everything that they have...
Yeah, long after they're finished, too.
Yeah. Everything they have comes out of our pocket and off our backs and out of our labor and out of our children's futures.
Well, this is what people need to know all the time and need to be reminded of instead of picking on the little guy. Because they're always talking about... somebody on the street, the welfare recipient or the homeless person or the criminal, which is a very vague term, and even indigenous, yet some of the attitude towards indigenous is really pitiful. They think we're giving everything free when they're the ones living off of our land and resources, and everybody needs to look at the real source of the problems, which is the big shots who hide behind that government.
This is the thing. Everything is hidden. It's a multi-layered game. And just the very concept of digging through it and seeing what it actually means is so daunting for the average mind. And it's like I was reading earlier today, this quote, and I know you'll appreciate this one, Kito. This is a quote by Dresden James, and he says, when a well-packaged web of lies has been sold gradually to the masses over generations, the truth will seem utterly preposterous and its speaker a raving lunatic.
Wow.
That's exactly what happens. I got to let my cat in. It'll take me about 3 seconds.
Okay.
Well, you know.
Yeah, reminds me in Canada, you know, we have the head of the CBC, Mansbridge, and he's a Bilderberger. You know, all these top people in CBC, they don't represent Canadians. They're controlled
not.
By the same elites as well. Like, people have to turn off their stupid TVs.
Yeah, and how is it that reporters get to be governor generals?
Yeah. Oh,
that's because it's a theater.
Yes, exactly.
Well, yeah, you need a good actor on the front end, don't you?
Yep, that's what it's about. The show must go on, and people don't even feel alive unless they're in the show. So we got a lot of work to do.
Yeah,
but,
that's for sure.
I wondered, Kito, if you could say something about the lady who... was on the hunger strike and what happened when she met Harper. And that's part of the Idle No More movement, isn't it?
Gee, Spence, well, it didn't start out to be, but they sure took up her cause quick enough, didn't they? It was sort of like once they got involved, all of a sudden what she was on about just took on a different spin.
It did indeed, and it was spun right out of control.
Completely.
I don't know quite what you're asking there as far as what do I think of her strategy, or what do I think of the fasting part.
Well, just what you thought of the whole thing and how it contributes to what you're explaining today. And
because they kind of took it over.
As I pointed out in a piece that I put on the Eagle Watch there during all of this, was, you know, the question of if fasting is an effective strategy. And having seen a precedent out here, I was quite cynical about it. Because we had these protests out here in 2007, anti-uranium mining protests here near Charbot Lake. And there was a lot of complex things going on. But what I determined with the whole thing was that it was a phony, police-led protest. And that's a lot to get your head around. But here's an example. A woman who currently sits on the National Council of the Green Party decided to undertake a fast, which she declared would fast to the death unless the government imposed a moratorium on uranium mining in eastern Ontario. And so the days went by, and being living in this community and having my ear to the ground, it was brought to my attention that this woman was doing regular fasts as part of a health regime, and that if you know what you're doing, you can easily fast for a month.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was told, you know, during her fast that she was not going to fast to the death, but a lot of people got really upset and, please, beg her to stop. And that's exactly what happened with Teresa Spence. And I never did find out the details of how it came about that she decided to wage a fast. I am totally on side that there are serious problems at Attawapiskat and many of the James Bay communities, mainly because they sit on huge resources and the government just wants to starve those people out. Yes, there's nepotism in many communities, but you really got to be there to see what's going on. And the victim is being blamed. Indigenous people are being blamed. And the buck has to go a little higher. So
I can't really put
much energy into the Idle No More thing because it's about band council chiefs and what they represent. As a non-status person, they don't represent me, and I don't believe they represent their own people either.
No, I think you're probably right.
I just move on.
Well, this is the same thing I'm hearing from other people, who have inroads into other indigenous communities across the country. And as far as Teresa Spence and her fast is concerned, I read a little note the other day that said that the UN has officially asked for her fish broth recipe because she went fasting for 6 weeks and didn't lose any weight.
Interesting.
Yeah, they said she didn't lose any of her considerable bulk. Which I suppose is a nice way of saying that she was a tubby girl. But she's still a tubby girl after 6 weeks of no food. Hello? You know, must be a hell of a fish broth she was eating.
Yeah, well, you can last a long time on that anyways.
Well, yeah, this is it.
They had people with the curds.
As long as you're hydrated.
Yeah, exactly. When the Kurds were fasting in Turkey, which is a little-known thing, that got publicity on that got cut off to the West. People were surviving for over 200 days.
Wow.
As long as they got water, 200 days. That's a long time.
Yeah,
and
it doesn't take much.
So what was the consequence of the Prime Minister meeting with the lady? I never really followed the news. I didn't catch it all.
There wasn't anything to catch.
There wasn't anything to catch.
That's my opinion.
Uh-huh.
Well, I mean, the meeting came and went. What exactly came out of it? Sean Attlee, you're going, oh, I'm sick, I'm working so hard, the doctor says I can't work, you know.
They still confuse the issue of who is the Crown and who represents the Crown and all the confusion that's been cast on a subject that's already very confused. You know, it's quite simple if you read the treaties that that refer to the various areas. In James Bay, it's Treaty Number 9, and the reference is Crown and her representatives. So it doesn't matter if it's the Prime Minister or the Governor General. It doesn't matter. They're all agents of the Crown. And who
yeah,
is the Crown? Who does the Crown represent? That's a better question. Like, does the Crown represent Canadian people? Does the Crown represent you or me? Who does the Crown represent in their dealings with people and, for example, the treaties that were made with Indigenous people here?
Or is the Crown a part of the bankers in the downtown London? Is that who the Crown is?
Well, yeah, that's who we're talking about.
Yeah,
the Crown specifically would be the head of the British Isles, the Queen of England, Scotland, Ireland, and however it's named at any given time.
Yeah,
the
but
Queen
even
right
she,
now.
Even she can't go to the City of London without an appointment. And she can go to the Middle Temple, but not the Inner Temple. And if she
exactly.
If she is allowed into the Inner Temple at all, she has to be accompanied by beef-eater guards and be wearing a uniform and all this kind of hoo-ha. So the real Crown is not the Crown. It's not the Queen. It's not Prince Philip. It's not any of the heirs and assigns of the Windsor-slash-Austrian Nazi family. But, in fact, the Crown is basically the City of London and the Masonic bankers who rule it all.
Exactly.
Well, it has to be people.
No, well, they don't care about people. This is feudalism. This is feudalism. I mean, I spotted that a long time ago, that really the only difference between the old feudalism and this techno-feudalism that we have now is labels. That's it.
Pretty much, and we get to watch TV.
Yeah.
Instead of sitting in a dark hut, we get to watch TV.
Yeah, we get to watch 900 channels full of reality shows where people make idiots of themselves for prizes. Now the Romans used to do that. They used to have gladiators, bread and circuses. And I have to point out too, you know, before people get too overwhelmed by all of this, because I'll tell you, even the stuff you've revealed today is like, holy crap. Holy crap, what kind of a mountain of dirt are we under? But I would point out that bread and circuses routine only lasted so long before the fall of the Roman Empire. So when
That's
they
right.
have to entertain
but,
us, you know, when
Well,
they
you
have,
know, speaking of, as part of my personal medicine bag, I do consider it very important to have a sense of humor because there's an awful lot of heavy stuff goes on, and if you're hard, you'll break.
That's
so you
right.
got to have a sense of humor to keep yourself fluid. And in the interest of humor, if you would like, I could tell a joke.
Please.
All right. Now, there was this man, and he was very sincerely looking to meet a woman. So he meets this woman, and he's trying to be honest and open, as people should be in relationship. And so he says to her, you know, he says, I want to confess, he says, us men, we're very harsh in our attitudes towards women, he says. We rate you women on a scale of 1 to 10. So the woman pauses and she says, you know, she says, I want to be honest too, she says. Us women are very cruel and we can be quite harsh in our judgments of you men. She says, we rate you men on a scale of 0 to 10. I know.
And we
I have a few
it,
others, but
we
you never know with
listener.
Your audience.
Yeah, we leave it to the listener to figure out where you, where the guy.
Now, am I
going to
be accused
scale?
Of sexism for telling that joke?
No.
Because I have all kinds of jokes.
I'll bet you do.
I have Indian jokes.
Not the least of which is the one that's being played on all of us. Boy,
well, it is. It's a cosmic joke.
Okay.
Yeah, but no. That's the cosmic joke. Yeah, that's the way it is, but no, it isn't.
Well, it's like I say to my grandson.
Sorry?
I tell my grandson, he's 4 years old, and he spends a lot of time with me, so you can imagine his vocabulary.
Oh,
so
Lord.
I say to him, you don't like to argue, do you? He says, no. No, he doesn't like to argue. He'll argue all day about how he doesn't like to argue.
Uh-huh.
But he's got some thinking.
Well, that's sort of like saying to somebody, you must not think about monkeys tomorrow, and then all day they walk around going, I must not think about monkeys, and of course you're thinking about monkeys.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
But that's power of suggestion to the human mind. We're very impressionable creatures because that's part of how we survive. We need the pack, we need the group, and so we can be influenced.
Yeah, we sure do.
I wonder, Kito, how do you think within the Native community there's greater awareness of what's going on around us than there is in the non-Native community?
Oh, Christopher, that's a good question.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes I would say yes, because we're often at the bottom looking up. And when you're underneath,
yeah.
you can see up under those that are up the ladder. But
yeah.
I would have to qualify that by saying that both Native and non-Native people are abysmally ignorant about our common history,
mm-hmm.
and that needs to be fixed.
Yeah, it sure does.
Yeah.
People have no
idea. A lot
idea.
Of Native people don't know their own history.
No,
and I've seen that happen in the last 20 years. It's very sad.
It is very sad. I mean, it, even when I was growing up as a kid in Winnipeg, I mean, and of course, a lot of the people who are Indigenous around Manitoba, where I grew up, they're Cree. And, you know, the Cree language was being used on the reserves back then. Nobody speaks it anymore. There doesn't seem to be any use of the old language. The old ways are being forgotten. They're not being put in comparison. And I think if they started putting these things in comparison with the way things are now, they would very quickly see that there was justice and there was fairness and there was honor involved in the way of self-governance that you mentioned earlier, that the self-governance of the Native communities was awesome. It was awesome. In fact, it was so awesome that Lincoln and Washington, it was Washington, I think, who basically looked at the longhouse way of government, you know, from the Iroquois, and said, wow.
Well, they did, because we knew, and some of us have forgotten, that we need each other to survive.
Yeah.
So social relations have a lot to do with how you treat the next person. And the thing that many of us have lost now is our connection to the land and how to live off the land.
Yeah, exactly.
Because we depend on the bologna in the grocery store like everybody else. Well, some may be eating steak, but getting your food in the grocery store is a disconnect from reality, and those are the kind of realities we need to restore. We could go off on a lot of topics here, by the way.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can see it. You can see it in the non-Native community too, in the sense that everything they're selling to us now has an element of convenience to it that takes away a labor and a skill that we used to have and should have. Those skills, like how to fix things that break, how to build things, how to grow things.
How to milk a cow.
How to milk a cow. Our kids don't even know milk comes from cows.
Unfortunately.
They most of them haven't even seen a cow, except on TV.
I wonder, Dee, I think we're at halfway in our show, and
I
wonder if Doug over at the station would like to play one of our songs. It might be the one that we usually use, which is Sacred Land. And then you brought in this other one. What was the name again, Dee?
It's called No No Keshagesh. Keshagesh means greedy guts.
Oh, yeah, really.
And it's a wonderful song by Buffy St. Marie, and I'm hoping Doug got it loaded. If not, well, you guys can look it up on YouTube because it's there.
and maybe we'll have to play it another time, but we'll see if anything comes on, and then we'll take a break and come back after.
Okay.
Okay.
That'd be great.
But we'll keep on talking until the music comes on, because then we know that we're not just leaving airtime.
Yeah.
I remember all the stories my grandpa used to tell about a time in this sacred land. The buffalo did roam out on the open plain. The eagle soared high up in the sky. There wasn't any shame, there wasn't any pain. Yes, he said, they were so very proud. They lived a simple life, Mother Nature did provide. There was no law, but there was no crime. And then the white man came, he brought his way of life. Nothing's been the same the day the white man came. Yes, they brought their whiskey and they brought their gun. They took away our land, they put us on the run. Locked us on this reservation, changed our ways of life. Promises were made, but they were only lies. And then the white man came, he brought his way alive. Nothing's been the same the day the white man came. Some days what he said, the nations they will rise. All the chiefs from long ago, they will be by your side. Into the battleground, a warrior you will ride. Armed with years of wisdom, many years of pride. The day the white man came, he brought his way alive. Nothing's been the same the day the white man came.
Wow. Okay, that was by Robin, a Canadian friend of mine who put me up when I was traveling across Canada last month out by Nelson, B.C. Thank you, Robin, for a very profound song. I wonder if Keto, is Keto back?
I'm here. Are we on air?
Okay. I wondered, Keto, if you would tell us a little bit about your book.
Book?
Yeah, about your book, A Calamity. Sorry?
Have you seen it?
No, I haven't.
Well, it's called A Calamity Threatens Your Happiness, and it's something that I put together as a reference work after the protests in 2007 out here, the phony police-led anti-uranium mining protests. And I know that's a mouthful, and I deal with every aspect of that. I was involved with another publication at the time, Mohawk Nation News, and worked with them on a series of articles as events unfolded here during this 100-day protest. And during that time, we did a lot of research and uncovered a lot of things that were related to what was going on, and it was and we're able to put some pieces together. And so that's what I put out in this book. It's six chapters, and it starts off talking about the uranium mining protests, and it gets into things about the nuclear industry and how we became aware of how much there was of it in our area, which is southern Ontario. And then we were looking at military involvement and the bases in our area and what they were up to, like, for example, the Trenton Air Base, which is a huge international airport in southern Ontario. And all along we're weaving the chronology of what was happening with the Native people being involved in this protest. A lot of people came here, and when I say that it was police-led, that it was a phony police-led protest, that gets a lot of people upset, because a lot of people came into it as being sincerely involved in supporting Native rights and being opposed to a uranium mine. But
that's
the
how they get you, though.
Analogy that I have to make is ask if you ever heard of a show called Candid Camera.
Oh, yeah.
I think there's one nowadays that's called Just Gags. So they have camera people and actors out on the street, and people are walking along the street, and they just walk into these scenarios without knowing that it's a TV show. And this protest was exactly like that. And so the book goes into a lot of detail about all these different things, and there's copies available. A person could send me an email. Could send them a copy.
It's
self-published. I didn't go to a publishing house because I didn't think they would take it as is.
Well, you know what?
Takes shots at a lot of different entities.
Well, you know what? That
and ties
a lot
them together.
For our publishing industry. If a decent publisher in this country would not publish what you did, then I'll tell you, there's something wrong with the publishing industry, because I've read this book cover to cover, and it is stunning. It is a stunning revelation of what's been going on. And the insights that you shared in that book, I read it from cover to cover with my jaw on the floor.
Wow.
You know, literally with my jaw on the floor. And I consider myself to be relatively well-informed, as opposed to the average person who doesn't spend their day looking through stuff, you know, and concerning themselves with these issues, you know?
With this project, isn't the mining of uranium for weaponry and such, I thought that was illegal under Canadian law. What do you think of that, Kito?
I'm sorry to have to shatter your innocence, Christopher.
Uh-huh.
Canada is a number one producer of uranium and is intimately, intricately involved with the whole nuclear weapons picture. And you can never separate nuclear reactors from nuclear weapons, because that's why the reactors were made in the first place, to produce the materials to make the bombs.
Exactly. Oh. Exactly. And, of course, the depleted uranium that we create, which should be getting disposed of safely, ha-ha, is really being sold to the United States to make DU weapons, which we've dumped all over Iraq. So when we see these pictures of deformed children, and we see our soldiers coming back, especially in the States, they're having deformed babies at a horrendous rate because they were exposed to DU weapons. And it's like one particle of this stuff has a half-life of, what, 4.5 million years? So you're not getting rid of it. You're not getting rid of it. And they're just dumping this all over Iraq.
Well, someone, John, are you there?
Yes. Yep.
Hello? John Trudell, who was a Lakota Indian and one of the old Amers along with Leonard Peltier and others, he said, because the Native people were trying to resist nuclear development back in the early 70s, but we got sidelined and that was wrecked. But nuclear war is being waged on us right now with the proliferation of nuclear materials.
Absolutely.
It's not a war that's going to happen. It's happening.
It's already happening. And then, of course, when you add in all the other aspects that they're doing against us, you know, smart grids and chemtrails and everything else, we are under an assault of weapons of mass destruction constantly, and people don't even know it.
Yeah.
We are, and a lot of times someone will ask a single question about, well, why is all this craziness going on? And, you know, sometimes it just boils down to that one horrible word, depopulation.
Well,
but
you
have
want...
to be careful how you introduce this to people because they just freak out.
I know. It's just like that quote I just mentioned a few minutes ago. You know, over generations, they've plied us with lies. And we all figure that, you know, there's no way the government would be that evil.
Well,
yeah, they would. Yeah, they would.
If you want to... if you want to talk about the treaties, that would be a historical example of how the government has lied.
Oh, yes. Well, let's get there. But there's one more thing I wanted you to mention that you do cover so ably in your book, since we were on the topic of your book. And then we'll go to that.
Right, sure.
What you were talking about a great deal in your book is how the water resources are being manipulated away from Canadian hands. And, of course...
Oh, absolutely.
And, of course, you've got Attawapiskat. I'm looking at this and I'm going, wait a minute. That's according to a map that's in your book. Those people are smack dab in the middle of a major diversion project.
Yeah. Yeah,
so isn't it
and it's a, it, we see it as a three-part plan. It's a three-part plan. The first step is take out all the trees. The second step is to dig up all the minerals. And the third step is the water diversion. And that's been in plans for a long time. This is not somebody's silly fantasy. This has been
this
in the works for a long time.
It's been going on for ages. Harper's just continuing.
Yeah, he's just carrying on. He didn't start anything. He's just one ugly figurehead that's having his day. And he's laughing all the way to the bank and whatever creepy stuff he does along the way, that smile on his face is kind of scary.
I know. It's a bit smug for my liking.
You know?
But yeah, and you know, this is the thing you're talking about. In the book, you're basically showing all these connections. And for me, it was like, holy crap, talk about a watershed moment to see how these things add up and what's going on with these resources and how absolutely deadly it's going to be for Canadians to lose control of their water. But this is what they're on about. This is what they want.
This is what it's working towards.
Yep.
I don't know what it's going to take.
Well, for people to wake up. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. This is terribly scary.
The major water diversion that you were talking about, Dee? You mentioned one of them particularly.
Well, it's the James Bay Aquifer.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah.
And it basically gives a third of Canadians their water. You're talking
to reverse,
about...
To reverse the flow of the of those rivers back this way down the Ottawa River with a big dam at Montreal, and then the water goes pushed back into Lake Ontario and down into the U.S. where the drought is only getting worse. These people are just waiting to get to the point where they've got the legislation in place. And the demand for water will cause the price to soar. It's just, it really boggles the mind to think about these things.
Well, but gosh, doesn't that sound familiar, eh? You know? That
it does.
The price of water would soar, and then, well, hey. You know, so
what's
here
next?
We are, and we're in the middle of this massive sale off of our resources to these corporations who have never given any benefit to Canadians at all and don't intend to.
No, they don't intend to at all. They're completely predatory. That's what makes some people make it to the top. You've got a lot of smart people who have great business plans. They're very intelligent. But the ones who make it to the very top have a predatory, ruthless tendency that we have a name for that. And, well, I'm not big on psychiatric terms. It is descriptive, and it means something to people. They're a bunch of sociopaths.
Yep.
The people at the top. And they would be diagnosed that way, but they're protected by their wealth.
Well, you know, it's funny because a friend of mine down in the U.S. sent around a piece the other day. It was in two parts. And he was talking about how the U.S. government shouldn't have any arms because they are a psychopath, and he could prove it. And son of a gun if he didn't just prove it, because he took all the... And, of course, the movie The Corporation, that one also proved that corporations are psychopaths, and we know that the governments are corporations. They're not governments at all.
No.
The band councils are corporations, too.
Well, they are now. They didn't start that way. You know? I mean, when back in the day...
Yeah, it's been incremental.
Yeah, totally.
You know, it's cooking the frog in the pot. You slowly heat up, and he doesn't realize he's being cooked.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is it. It's just getting more and more and more complexly taken over, you know, by people who do not exactly have our best interest in mind.
Yeah, the sociopaths.
Yeah, those sociopath guys that we were mentioning a minute ago, you know.
It's funny how it's interesting in the old DSM 3 and 4, they didn't have a title for sociopath. And a lot of people thought, well, why isn't the sociopath in the DSM 4? And the reason is because they left it out, because they didn't want people to really realize who was running the countries and corporations.
Yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Well, you have to be a sociopath to treat people like that.
Yeah, you do. You do.
I mean, come on. You're talking about... Look at Obama. Let's just take a quick look at Obama and what happened in Sandy Hook. And there he is trying to make like he's crying over other people's children. And everybody knows it was fake tears.
Crocodile tears.
Yeah, totally crocodile tears. Where was the sadness? And then, of course, all the other phony crap that went with that. I mean, that one's going to go down in history once people figure it all out. But
people have to figure it out. They have to figure out their own feelings and what's racism. Because I think the American people got duped on the basis of not wanting to appear racist. Here comes this guy that's got slightly brown skin, and everybody jumps back like, oh, we don't want to be critical of him because we might be accused of racism. Well, he was no different than his predecessors. They could send him in stripes.
Well, I've been saying for a long time, and I double dog dare anybody to disagree with me, but a crook is a crook no matter what color he is. I mean, if he's purple with pink polka dots, who cares? He's still a crook.
Well, this is it.
You know,
racism is a system.
Yep, and there's Obama with, you know, the crap that he has stood for and promoted and done to his own people. It's enough to make you absolutely sick. But he
does. Well, I'm
sure
it is making a lot of people sick. People who call themselves patriotic and otherwise. People are angry. I notice, so it doesn't matter. I could talk to anybody of any demographic, and everybody is angry. And pegging the problems, but the solutions are the difficulty.
Yeah.
How are we going to solve these problems? Fortunately, there's younger people coming up that do have energy, And a lot of them are getting their heads around this stuff. And my hope is with the future, but we just have to keep on doing our homework as grandmothers. That's how I see my role as a grandmother. I have a responsibility to show people things, but I can't make them listen.
No, you can't. You can lead a horse to water, as they say, but you can't make him drink.
I mean, it seems like the corruption must come at the superior levels of the RCMP and CSIS and in the States, the CIA and the FBI. I mean, these people are all involved in all these cataclysmic things which they're creating. They never capture anyone for any of the events which are done to us. Like the Sandy Hook.
You notice that.
The Sandy Hook shooting. I mean, that there's so many frauds about that people don't even know if there were any children killed or how many, what went on there. We really know nothing about it. And it's all this ultimate corruption must go to the top levels of the RCMP and CSIS in Canada.
It does. And this, unfortunately,
yeah.
it's all the way down into society, too, because you have people that they may be small potatoes, but they still have elitist aspirations, and they support the elite with their actions and their labors and their opinions. I mean,
well,
we've got some really ignorant people who come at our communities,
you.
Like, you know, over at Caledonia where things went on and are still simmering to erupt again. People like Gary McHale and Ezra Levant, and these are very ignorant people who get a voice, and their opinions are really poisonous.
Yeah, no kidding. And Ezra just got fined, didn't he? Didn't Ezra just get fined?
He did. He did. He got a slap on the wrist, finally. But he said some really awful things over the last decade or so.
Well, he has done that. He has done that for sure. And
I call them the poison pen guys because they really want to stir up anti-Indigenous opinion. And I understand the Canadian taxpayers are getting cheated too, and they don't like to feel ripped off. Nobody likes to feel ripped off, but
well,
we have to identify who the thieves are.
And the thing is, it's all about scapegoating. You know, it's like they started scapegoating Teresa Spence.
Now, yeah, they did.
A lot of things could be said about Teresa Spence, but, you know, if you're going to say, oh, this woman, she's one of three, and she's making $65,000 a year, blah, 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 that ought to be enough for any of us. Yeah, well, at $9 a liter for milk, hello? You know, how can...
Well, there's lots... A
$65,000 a year.
There's lots of bigger
salary.
Problems to tackle.
Well, I mean,
it's a strategy of blame the victim.
Exactly, and you know, you got to think about it. If food and resources, like family resources up there, are that expensive, you know, then what we're talking about here is the disabling of a community, complete disabling of a community, because they're not allowed anymore by their indoctrination to do things in their traditional ways. Now, if they were doing traditional thing, they wouldn't need any money. They'd have it all covered.
It's about our connection with the land, and when we're denied that, we're dying. But we're not dead yet. It's not over till it's over.
That's for sure. Well, I don't.
I was wondering if you wanted to talk any more about treaties or resource wars or law enforcement and the military.
Take your pick.
Whichever exciting topic grabs you.
Oh, well, hey, take your pick. They're all exciting.
Well, they're all related, too. And in addressing the topic of treaties and resource wars, the connection is in time. The number of treaties in particular that were made between the Crown, also known as the Canadian government, and different Indigenous communities, mostly Anishinaabe, the negotiations and the wording in those treaties it's unmistakable. But the unfortunate thing is that there was a different interpretation of what those treaties involved. And so you had treaty negotiators like Alexander Morris, who happened to be from Perth in Upper Canada, which was a town not far from Charlotte Lake. And he was the son of a warlord, a military officer from the War of 1812, which was another creation. And he became a lawyer, and he and his father both were involved in land speculation and acquiring large amounts of land. His father, first of all, through the clergy reserves, and Alexander Morris through these treaties. So you have here a man who was a treaty negotiator with the Indians. He didn't really know the Indians. He got his information through sending out his scouts. He was a lawyer, and he was a land speculator, and he was also part of, he was a protege of John A. MacDonald and part of his business associates, and they were all involved in putting in the railway across the Pacific Railway to unite Canada coast to coast and build this big nation, which was largely about them making money.
Well, of course it was.
And so they signed these treaties, and the two in particular that I've looked at is Treaty Number 3 and Treaty Number 9, which is a James Bay Treaty area, which covers Attawapiskat. And the promises that were made to the indigenous were not kept, and the interpretation that both sides had was not the same. So there's this guy who's a professor up at, I think, Lakehead University. His name is John Long. He put out this book called Treaty Number 9, and one of the things he has in it is quotations from one of the treaty negotiators' diary. There was the Ontario representative of Treaty 9 was Daniel McMartin, another lawyer from the Perth area, younger than Alexander Morris, but possibly a neighbor. Anyways, Daniel McMartin's diary was discovered at some of the archives here a couple of years ago, and in it he was noting that the Anishinaabe Cree were they had a different idea of what was being negotiated and what the terms of the treaty were, and that was different from what was written down by the English and the originals sent back to London. So this is what comes up now all the time as what people are arguing about, but the position that I'm taking is that the Crown did not negotiate in good faith, and that they did not have honor, and they did not exercise any honor. So therefore, a treaty that is negotiated in bad faith becomes null and void.
Well,
and treaties must also be renewed on regular intervals to keep them alive, and that has never happened. So my position, instead of saying honor the treaties, I'm saying the treaties have to be renegotiated. And
yes,
that has to go right to the basics of who represents either side.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate,
mainly questions.
Too.
I don't have the answers.
Well, that's unfortunate, too, because I remember hearing a quote a couple of years ago from Harper saying, don't worry about the natives. We'll deal with them when the treaties expire.
The treaties do not expire. And that and the wording in the treaties refers to the Queen and the Crown and heirs, the Queen at the time, because it was Queen Victoria, and heirs forever. Personally, I find the word forever is very cruel in those terms.
Well, it's
because any kind of a legal arrangement, it can't possibly be forever. That's arrogance.
Yeah, well, it's arrogant and it's stupid because you never know what's going to happen. I mean, there could be a natural cataclysm that changes everything.
It changes the face of the land.
Yeah, exactly. We are creatures of the land, no matter whether we're white or indigenous or whatever. We're still creatures of the land. That's how we all got here. And
well, you mentioned an important thing, because this is where the distortion has come in. My elders taught me that the land owns us. We don't own the land.
No
but
kidding.
Now we've been forced into this position of land claims and land ownership and owning the resources and getting our share of the profits. That's all haywire.
Well, that's all
wrong.
That's all wrong. without the land, we don't have anything. We have nothing. You know, so the best we can do is take care of it. That's the best
we
can
do. We need to take care of it, and we need to leave a lot of it in the ground, because what's it being dug up for? Is it being dug up to wage more wars on more people on the earth? We have a responsibility as indigenous people to know what our resources are being used for in the world, which
well,
is now killing other people.
Whether you're indigenous or not, I have to agree with that one completely.
Yeah.
Whether we're indigenous or not, I mean, we all have a stake. We're all Turtle Islanders now, no matter whether we're colonial-based or what. It makes no difference. We're here. And because we're here
and we're stuck with each other.
We're stuck with each other, and we better learn to get along and get smart.
Yeah.
But these people aren't smart. These people are really quite psychiatrically disturbed, who are running our countries and running the world. I mean, we face a serious problem. I have no idea what the solution to any of these things is. How possibly can we bring these people to real justice for what they've done? I don't know.
Well, the answer is, you know, people ask me this all the time because I'm so critical of many things. I say, okay, then tell us what the solution is. I'm sorry, but I cannot do that because the solution is not with one person. The solution comes when we all join hands in a circle. As corny as that may sound, it's the mental part I'm trying to get across here, is that when we put our minds together, then the solutions will become apparent to us in that circle. It's not something that one person gets it, bingo, I got it, now I'm going to tell the rest of you what to do. That's not how it works.
No,
so we all have
a
piece.
But then they have their own circles, which have very different effects than what the people might decide in the circle. Like even if we could get all natives to make a decision, then they're up against the elites who have control of the military and the police and the whole shebang.
Which brings us to another point. That military.
You want to go into the resource wars or the law enforcement and military?
Oh, well, you know what? It's like you said about the theme of this. You know you're living in a police state when?
Yeah, take your pick.
Yeah, take your pick.
So,
and you look at the recruitment of ex-military guys, you know, now that we've got such elite-trained special forces that Canadians never knew about. You know, now all of
well,
a sudden...
Well, this one example came up to my attention this week when I was preparing for this talk that we're doing right now. And it was quite shocking, even for for me. There's always something else. You know, you think, okay, I've lost my innocence here. I've got the picture, and then there's something else that just takes a little more out of you in seeing the truth. And so this is this guy, this Rob Burlong. So he's on the Edmonton Police Force, and he's been brought before the disciplinary committees for dishonorable conduct. And what he did was he was drunk and he peed on another officer. So he got in trouble, and they had their little court case, which was closed to the public because, as the court said, it would embarrass the victim. Now, since when do court cases get closed because it will embarrass the victim? I can think of a lot of examples where victims have been vilified in courtrooms. But in this case, they had privacy. And so this Rob Burlong, he was convicted, and the police services are appealing it. So it's going to go before the Alberta Supreme Court. Meanwhile, he's been taken off duty, I think with pay, and wants to get reinstated in the Edmonton Police Force. Well, we read this article, and we decided to look into it a little further and find out that this guy is a former Canadian Forces sniper who was in Afghanistan, and he's a special guy because he was able to kill his target at the farthest distance. up until 2009 when an Englishman beat his record. So here he is. He's taught as a sniper. He's a crack shot. He loves to kill. And he's taught in the military to see others as the enemy, which is dehumanizing and helps a soldier to kill, right? So now he's a cop in Edmonton, where there's a very large Native population and a big issue over Native gangs. And here's a guy, he's a ex-Canadian military sniper, and he's driving around in Edmonton patrolling neighborhoods. So is he going to see the people on the street as his fellow citizen, or is he going to see them as the enemy?
Yeah,
and here's a guy that pissed on another cop's leg the other day.
Yeah, well, hey, I mean, you gotta know that there's something seriously wrong, and you gotta know that police forces across the country and across the United States, I mean, look at the news that came out a while back that the U.S. Department of Homeland Security had just bought all these mega millions of rounds of ammunition, 450 million rounds of 223 rifles. Well, that's what was supposedly used in Sandy Hook. And, you know, the government is arming themselves with the very bullets that they don't want anyone else to have. And at the same time...
So who are they
going
to wage war on?
Exactly. Who are they waging war on? Department of Homeland Security has no need for such weapons.
Well, it's to wage war on us.
Well, exactly.
I mean, that's a... Yeah.
Exactly.
That's where they're going with it.
That's where they're going with it. And anybody who is naive enough to think that's not what's happening... Well, I double-dog dare you come up with another reason why the Department of Homeland Security should want 450 million rounds.
Especially when they're illegal under the Geneva Accords.
Exactly.
Well, there you go.
So,
this is part of what comes up in the book, eh? And it goes into a whole lot of the so-called non-lethal weapons that law enforcement uses and this whole general trend where... law enforcement and the military are blending, and that is a sign of you are in a police state.
Yep, big time. I mean, I know of the family that owns a company that makes those little robot thingies that they use for, you know, hostage situations and things, the little, you know, those little robots that have rifles on them and cameras on them. And that family is from Toronto. They're from Pickering. And very nice people, very, very nice people, but they're making, you know, millions and billions of dollars supplying these things to military, to paramilitary. I mean, our police are now flat-out paramilitary. They are not what they're not the familiar, the boys in blue, the guy on the street that you can always count on to make sure your kid is safe, you know, none of that. None of that anymore.
Never been that for us.
But, and I can remember when I was a kid, my dad was very close with a family who, one of the men in the family became the chief of Winnipeg Police, and I called him Uncle Earl. He was very close to our family. He wasn't my uncle by blood, but he was very close, so he was Uncle Earl to me. And Uncle Earl was over one day, and he and my dad were discussing, you know, what's the nature of the police forces these days. It's starting to get a little scary. Now, bear in mind, this is in the late 50s.
Right.
Okay? The late 50s. I'm all of about 10 years old. And he said, of Winnipeg then, he said, I give them about 6 months. When a new recruit comes on to the Winnipeg police force, he says, they're all eager and idealistic, and they really want to serve humanity and all of that. But he says, you give them 6 months of exposure to the dregs of society, day in and day out, they become paranoid of everybody they meet. Everyone is not a human being. They are a potential threat. And he said, so after about 6 months, they become hardened, and they become scary people.
Yep, that's
and I
it.
Never,
and it's,
I never
it's a
forgot
trend.
That, but you know, that's 50 years ago.
Yeah.
And what is
well,
it now?
Just one more thing about this Furlong guy, this Bob Furlong. He was a police officer brought in from other forces during that G20 summit in Toronto.
In 2010.
Where we know
yeah.
a lot of abuses went on.
Oh, yeah, there were a lot of them. And, I mean, I know people who witnessed the U.S. military guys coming in and being given Toronto police uniforms at the Pearson International Airport. So
yep.
there's a lot of people who know a lot of small facts, which if you add them all up, tells you that
yep.
was an operation of magnificent proportions.
Yeah.
And the reason why it cost so much is because they had to pull in all these resources. Now there's rumors that Chinese troops have been brought into the States to fire on U.S. citizens, and the latest rumor, which was last week, was that Obama is now asking the military, heads of military, are they prepared to fire on U.S. citizens? And the rumor is, now I don't know how true this is, I would bet that it probably is, but it's probably a little more covert than they're letting us know.
Right.
But essentially the top military brass are being either kept or let go or reassigned based on whether or not they will fire on U.S. citizens. Now, what does that tell you?
That there's a great struggle at the top.
Huge.
There is a great struggle at the top. It's a scramble, and it's just as ugly right at the top.
Yep, it is, because these people don't realize, you know, there's very few people who fit into the class of the elite. There's very few people the elite will protect. And what these same people who are, they're basically sticking their noses up the elite butt one way or another for their own benefit, and they're thinking that they're being kept safe. And the truth
yep.
of the matter is, they're no safer than anybody at the bottom of the ladder. They're just being conned.
And that's right.
It's their children and their grandchildren that'll suffer for what they're doing. And, you know, only time is going to tell how many of them are going to smarten up and do the right thing for the right reason.
Yeah. Well, you know, Mother Earth has her own plans. And sometimes I just think of us humans as like fleas. You know,
yeah,
scratch here, scratch
that
there.
One for years. One day that bitch is going to scratch.
Yeah, and she's going to scratch really hard, and the fleas are going to go flying every which way.
Yeah, well, you know, it'll be fun to see where they land.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a great time to be alive, and even though all this heavy stuff's going on, we just got to keep on doing what we're doing. If we have an opportunity to smell the flowers, then we do. If we have an opportunity to kiss a baby, we do, in the right way. And
funny you should say
smile
that.
Smile at the sunshine.
Well, we
is
got
that,
to smile
is, who,
about
who's
something.
Laughing there? Is that Christopher laughing?
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
all the pedophiles in our governments and corporations and such.
Oh, yeah, and now you've got another
you
one
know, you got
exposed.
You got to be careful how you say things, right? I say kiss a baby, and that's still my innocence. And then I realize, well, yeah, there's some creeps out there that would take that the wrong way.
Yeah, no
so
kidding.
So
we've
got to protect our children.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know what? I mean, nowadays, if you discipline your child, you're up by for child abuse. But then again, CAS, Children's Aid Society, hands out the kids regularly to pedophiles.
Do they, though?
We know that.
Oh, it's ridiculous. It's everywhere you look. And, you know, it's coming down to each one of us has to do something about something. And
yeah,
I know
we do. We need to keep our connection. Our connection to the earth is really important to
yeah,
replenish
this
ourselves.
This
yeah.
is it.
That's how we keep strong.
That's right. And a lady friend of mine out in B.C. said to me about 2 weeks ago, she said, these days, if you aren't an activist, you are a victim. And
yeah.
there's no question that's true. There is no question. And the sad part of it is that, you know, the more that people ignore all this because they're stressed out and I'm too busy and, you know, you can't fight City Hall and all these different stupid attitudes, the more people are like that, the more it just goes down and down and down and down. And eventually, it comes down to us that we have ruined the future for our own children.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, it's fine for you and me. I mean, the three of us sitting here combined, you know, we basically count for a lot of years on this planet just between the three of us. But,
yeah.
You know, that's great for us. Somebody wiped us out tomorrow. Well, we've lived full lives, and we've had all our fun, so to speak, and it wouldn't be that great a deal for us to end. But what about our children? And what about our grandchildren?
Yeah.
What about my
Well, I do
want to
be alive. I want to keep on living. I got life to live, and I want to continue to be the living archives for my grandchildren. And so I urge people to take care of themselves and to educate themselves and be those living archives for the future generations.
Well, this is it.
Because they're coming up, and they got to take over where we leave it to them.
Well, I know as far as I'm concerned, you are a national treasure. Because you are being that archive, and that means that you are standing as an icon of that tradition, which is what it always has been, not just for Indigenous people, but for
all
people.
Well, you know, Dee, it takes one to know one.
Well,
it takes your perception to welcome me to talk, and it's
well,
been great.
Yeah, well, that's true enough.
We can even still talk about gold.
True enough, but, you know, we can sit here and trade praise until the cows come home. I'm not interested in the praise. All I'm interested in, like you, is getting other people to think for themselves. And because if they do, they'll see what we see. You don't have to be a rocket scientist. You don't have to be brilliant.
No.
All you have to do
just
is
take
pay
a little
attention.
Time.
You know, just pay attention. You'll get it.
Well, it's like this stuff about going into Mali. Okay, this is a good example right now because we've been hearing things about France going into Mali and now
mm-hmm.
Canadians helping out with the big planes, the Globemasters, to transport troops and supplies, and it's ratcheting up. But when I first looked at this, I saw something that was based on previous research in regards to the nuclear topic. At one point, and this is a lesson in how to do research when you want to know a topic, and you're not an expert, you're not a professional, you just want to get at the truth. So I looked at what countries are producing the uranium. Well, Canada's at the top of the list there.
Uh-huh.
What countries are the nuclear-armed nations? So when I saw this thing about Mali, I know right next door to Mali is Niger, and France gets most of their uranium from Niger. They've already had problems there.
Well, of course.
And it's an indigenous problem.
And then
you have the Tuareg people, who are the pastoral people of the land. Their territory covers parts of Mali, Niger, and Algeria, which has also been
the Let's not forget either that back before they actually invaded Iraq, what were they saying? Well, Saddam Hussein got a bunch of yellow cake uranium from Nigeria.
Niger, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So,
well,
and that, of course, was a lie. But what did that engender
at the time?
But,
of course, France is a nuclear-armed nation, right?
Yeah. Well, what that engendered, was very, very tight controls over Nigeria. And now what you've got is you've got a situation where Mali is full of gold and sitting on oil and God knows what else. One of the poorest nations on the planet.
It is one of the poorest. Canada has its gold company in there.
There you go.
Oh.
I am gold.
So you add
I am gold has two big mines in Mali. That's why they're there. It's part of these resource wars.
Yeah, and in the meantime, there's also the rumor is out now that, and I dare say that there's probably pretty good backing for this rumor, and that is that a lot of countries that had gold in the U.S. Fort Knox being stored there,
mm-hmm.
that they're taking their gold out of the States,
and
that the U.S. is going into Mali so that they can replace the gold that they used and cheated people out of. so they don't get busted.
Yep, and so Canada's in there like a dirty shirt.
Oh, of course they are, with Harper's nose firmly up Obama's butt.
So this IM Gold, they're based in Toronto, and they also have a niobium mine in Quebec, and they are looking at starting another gold mine in Ontario.
Oh, boy. Yeah, and then you got to look at, you know, what was Mulroney's first big thing in office when he was prime minister? He ended the Foreign Investment Review Agency, and, of course, that's where all these lines started to get blurred, you know, in terms of who could own what where, and all of the little sneaky deals that have gone on since then. But it's like one big corporate machine feeding itself off people all over the world.
Yeah.
It is.
It is horrendous.
My goodness.
Absolutely horrendous.
I hope, Christopher, that that you're going to be able to take a big breath and get a big hug from somebody there today.
Yeah, I wish I could.
Because it is, and family is also very important.
I think family. We all need that right about now.
I wonder if natives are very aware of the chemtrail spraying. Any comments on that?
I would say that's patchy here and there.
Mm-hmm.
It's an individual thing, you know. You probably would not want to say that all Canadians are like you.
Mm-hmm.
So amongst Native people, there's all different opinions, all different levels of awareness, just like any other group of people.
Yeah.
You've got some people who are on the ball. You got some people who could care less. You got some people who deny.
Yeah.
Yeah. We are more the same than we choose to acknowledge.
And for sure.
You know, I mean, I've said for a very long time now that peace is found on common ground, and the minute we look at each other and see our common concerns, our common cares, our common worries, and our common hopes, that's when we can work together. But as long as we keep regarding ourselves as different from one another, that's where they divide us and they conquer us.
Well, you know, that's written into those treaties.
Yeah,
Believe it or not, that divide and conquer is written into those treaties separating the whites from the Indians.
Oh, yeah.
And putting the crown in between. The crown wanted to be in between so they could collect the taxes and run the show. So it's no accident that we find ourselves divided like that, and that's what we're working on, and I think that's what the quickening is about. To me, it's a good thing. Some people think it's a cataclysm, but it's a cleansing, and we need it.
Yeah, this is
it. Yeah, we do.
Hold on, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a bath that's long overdue, therefore it's going to be a real mean scrub that we have to go through, but it's like that Dresden quote. You know, people have been lied to generationally for hundreds of years. And now that it's coming to the point where that whole system is collapsing on itself because it had to, there had to be a wall that it was going to hit at some point, now
Absolutely.
It really is holding true that the truth will set you free.
Yep, that's what this is about.
Yep, and so you and I and Christopher and all the people that hopefully we share on this radio show and other radio shows, the more we can share of information that gets people thinking, the better off we will all be.
And if you want to give my email for people to get on the Eagle Watch newsletter, I would be honored to have people write to me and interested in the book. I have a few copies still. And if you know of a publisher who wants to publish it, well, that'd be very interesting too.
Yeah, well, let me just give your email address out then. If you are interested in being on the Eagle Watch, corresponding with Quito, getting a hold of a copy of her book while they still remain, and God bless us if we can get something to publish that book and get it more widespread. It is needed out there. Her email address is Quito, K-I-T-T-O-H, at storm.ca.
Storm.ca.
Yeah. Storm.ca. That's a very appropriate email, I thought.
And is that how we would also get on the Eagle Watch list?
Yep.
Yes, yes. Just write to me for all those reasons.
Yeah,
I love to hear from
let
people.
Me tell you, every little missive that comes out from the Eagle Watch is like an addendum to the book, and it is well worth your while. Please do yourself a favor and subscribe to Eagle Watch.
How is Eagle Watch distributed? Is it? Do you send copies off?
It's just an email newsletter.
It's just a newsletter.
How often? It's however often I can do it. Sometimes mm-hmm. they're forwards. I try to do original write-ups. And as Dee says, it continues from the book, and the things are tied together. There's archives at the list. And when you write to me, I can send those links and whatnot.
Awesome. Great.
I really thank you people for having me today, and hope we get a snowball rolling.
Well, I'll tell you, we really need one. We really, really need a snowball, and I thank you from the bottom of my heart for finally getting brave and coming on. I think it's so timely that you've been here, and I know there's going to be other shows in the near future that are going to want to have you on. We'd like to have you back.
Yeah.
Again, well, that'd be great. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you again so much for being here today. Unbelievable. Unbelievable the ground we've covered. And now we're coming close to the close of the show.
Yeah, we're down to a few minutes. So
yeah.
Any final things you wanted to say, Keitha?
Oh, I think I'm pretty much talked out there. I didn't know I could talk so long, but there we did it. Dee was right.
Yeah, we did. Almost 2 hours. That's pretty good.
Yeah, well, I knew you could. And I knew
well,
you
I knew
would.
You could.
I knew you would. Keitha was saying
well, thanks
to
for
me
the encouragement.
I will babble after 40 minutes. And I said, you never babble. She never, I mean, did you hear what she was saying? It was any of that babble? No, my dear, you got to realize how powerful you are, because I tell you, this has been one heck of an expose. One heck of an expose.
Cool, that's cool.
Yeah.
So,
okay, well, we'll let Keitha go, and thanks again, Keitha, and we hope to see you again in the future sometime.
Yeah, well, you guys aren't
that
far away from each other.
No, you're up. I'm in Kempville, just south of Ottawa. So maybe sometime, yeah.
Well, we'll get in touch. Get in touch, and we'll maybe we'll get together.
Yeah, that would be good. Great. Okay.
That would be great, and I'd love to at some show in the future have Shelley Ann Clark and Keitha on together. Now, wouldn't that be a show?
Yeah, that would be for sure. Okay, good.
That would be phenomenal. But thank you again, Keitha. We will talk soon and keep in touch. And again, people, keto@storm.ca for Eagle Watch news, and also to get a copy of A Calamity Threatens Your Happiness While They Still Exist.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll get that published in a harder cover. But I need to talk to Keitha. I publish my books through a printing house, and we can just publish her book through that, perhaps, you know? I'll have to talk to her about that.
Well, yeah, by all means. By all means, because it's well worth anybody's time to sit and educate yourself with the work that she's done here. It's phenomenal.
Okay, so while we're down to the end of the show, I would like to remind listeners to have a look at my website. It's at www.zeropoint.ca, and I advertise my books and scholarly research up there, and this show in a way is different from my regular scholarly research. I used to investigate mystical spiritual teachings and modern science, and after finding out what's happening in the world, it seems almost hopeless to do that. It feels like we have to focus on these major, major issues we're all facing.
Well, we have to bridge from here to there, and the way to do that is through the reality as we perceive it, and reality as we perceive it is not so real as we thought.
Yeah, it's certainly quite illusory,
mm-hmm.
everything. Yeah.
Everything is. Well, again, I have to say thank you to Quito. Are you still with us, Jen?
Yep.
Okay.
Okay. Well, you know, it's just like the more you educate yourself, the more truth you can share, the better off we all are. And that's all there is. That's all I can say. It's really all I can say.
Yeah. And we need people in the military and the RCMP and the services. We need people to realize the position they're in and turn this venture around of what these people are involved in. Like even people who listen to us, what's their purpose, eh? And they go along with this big deviancy of the elitist agenda. And what do they think they're getting? Something for their kids? Or they think they're avoiding the chemtrails, or they're avoiding the inoculations? These things are all so insane. Like if people on this planet could turn the situation around on these big globalists and put them all in prison and liberate the world. You know, it's just terrible what's being done all around the world. It scares me. You know, I'm later in my life, and you know, it's hard to face all this corruption in our society. And I just hope that someone on the inside. Say again.
You know what's hardest for me, Christopher?
Mm-hmm.
What's hardest for me is acknowledging how damn dumb I was for all those years.
Yeah, me too. I woke up 6 years ago looking into 9/11, and until that, I'd been completely naive as to what was happening. I had no idea.
Yeah. Generational lies and the faith in humanity that no government would be that evil.
Yeah, exactly.
Uh-huh.
And then you turn on your favorite TV shows, and you get all their lies and deceptions, and it's terrible. Is terrible.
It is indeed.
Okay, so well, I'm going to check out, and we'll see you in 2 weeks' time. Dee, we'll have an interesting talk on chemtrails.
Yes, we will. On the 16th of February is our next show, and Quito, we will have you back as soon as we humanly can, and
yeah.
We look forward to hearing more from you in the near future. And thanks again.
Okay, so that's all. Goodbye to our BBS listeners, and I hope we share this video widely. Thank you all.
Absolutely.
Okay, goodbye.
Bye-bye.